With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Try that again. I think these guys are like trying to work in here or something. But.
We had it scheduled.
Gotcha. 3, 2. Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast. I am Alex Smith, happy to be riding shotgun with Fran Duffy, the man, the myth, the legend. Happy to be co-hosting my first ever Journey to the Draft podcast. And Fran, I guess we'll have to start things off today with the wise words of Taylor Swift, which I know you didn't expect. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. The Temple Owls.
I didn't see that's coming, no.
Number 22 in the country.
That's right. Depending on which poll you look at, but you know,
I think 22 is the highest. You always look at the highest poll.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a great season for the Owls. Undefeated so far, the first time they've ranked in 36 years, I believe, or 37 years. So hope to keep it going. Got a tough game this week against East Carolina, and then next week Notre Dame comes to town, and that'll be a huge game. Obviously, at Lincoln Financial Field, the game's sold out, so it'll be a great atmosphere in here in South Philadelphia next week.
And you'll be there.
I will be in attendance, yes. I was scheduled to be there this past week against Central Florida, but last minute some things came up and I couldn't make it down there. But very, very excited to see them take on Notre Dame next week.
Did you expect this year from Temple?
No. I mean, especially not 6-0. And, you know, I think that the arrow has always been pointing up, you know, and Coach Rule's just done a great job there with that program. A lot of the different things that they've been able to do in recruiting and a lot of the steps they've made from a facility standpoint. So it's not just the football program, but just the university as a whole has just really taken steps to, you know, go in the right direction. So really exciting times here if you're a Temple alum.
We have a lot of stuff to get to today. A crazy weekend in college football. We saw some wild finishes. I'm sure some Michigan fans today aren't feeling too happy. But it is a beautiful, albeit a little bit cold day here at the NovaCare Complex as it is Monday. Game day, Eagles and Giants. Cannot wait for Monday Night Football. But first, we are talking about some of all the college football action this weekend. And we will start things off in Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, Fran, well, as we start things off in Draft Buzz, I thought that we would first take a look at the midseason All-America team. Now, this is according to Chad Reuter, a draft analyst for NFL.com, and I know some of the guys on this list are players that you and Chris McPherson have talked about in the past, but I thought we'd just run through it and go through some of the names.
Sure.
Trevon Boykin is a guy I know that you've talked about in the past. What have you seen out of Boykin in the last few weeks as he moves ahead in his college career?
Yeah, I think we know what Boykin is at this point in terms of what he is as a college player, and he's a very good college player. The question will be, as a draft prospect, what is he? And at this point, you know, to be kind, I don't know that he's anything more than a late round pick as a quarterback. And that's, you know, optimistic standpoint. I think, honestly, look, and this is the case with a lot of guys, you could have said the same thing about Braxton Miller a year ago from Ohio State. A position switch may be best case scenario for him moving forward. He has a start under his belt as a wide receiver. He started the home opener against LSU 2 years ago at wideout. So he's got some experience on the outside. Whether or not he wants to make that transition, we will see. But we saw Nick Marshall, who was the quarterback of that Auburn team a year ago. He made the transition to cornerback in the offseason, starting at the Senior Bowl. So we'll see if Boykin goes the same route.
Two of the most talented running backs in the country, Ezekiel Elliott at Ohio State, Leonard Fournette, of course, only a sophomore at LSU. But for Elliott, a junior, obviously he had a huge game in the national championship last year against Oregon. Where do you see the ceiling for those two running backs, but specifically Elliott?
I would say Fournette, just because of his body type, has probably got a higher ceiling in terms of, I mean, he's just so pretty to watch in terms of his speed in the open field, his ability to break tackles. His vision has gotten better over the course of his career. But Elliott, too, is just a complete package. And I went in a little bit skeptical when I went in to start watch Ohio State over the offseason, just of Elliott and what he can do, because I know it's an offense that offers a lot of different things in terms of misdirection. But, you know, you watch him play, he's got outstanding vision inside. He's got good vision in the open field as well. He's got the speed to run away from defenders. He's got short area burst and quickness to make people miss in a short area. The ability to run through tackles and his competitive nature as a runner is very, very impressive. So he takes care of the football. I mean, total pack. You check all the boxes with Ezekiel Elliott and a guy that really brings a lot to the table. I think when it's all said and done that he's going to be a first-round pick, and he may follow in the footsteps of a Todd Gurley. Now, will he go top 10? We'll see. But to me, Elliott is far and away better than Melvin Gordon was, who was a first-round pick a year ago out of Wisconsin. Hasn't panned out so far. He's far and away better than Melvin Gordon as a runner. So we will see where Elliott gets drafted, but I think he's ultimately a first-round pick.
Moving through the rest of the skill positions here, Josh Doctson is a guy that you guys have talked about in the past. But Corey Coleman, I believe he just set the Baylor single-season touchdown record, and he did it in about 5.5 games. 15 receiving touchdowns on the season. What is Corey Coleman's deal?
Yeah, and I think that he may have approached the, if he didn't set the mark for NCAA at this point in the season with his 15th touchdown catch. I mean, look, the guy makes a ton of plays. He plays in an offense that he's going to get fed the football, and if you can get deep on corners, you're going to get fed the football. And Seth Russell's done a good job of dispersing the football amongst his different receiving threats. They've been able to run the ball better this year than they have been in the past. But look, Coleman, when you look at him, and as a guy that we're going to talk about a little bit in his pick six, so I don't want to dig too deep, athletically, everything's there. But as is the case with most Baylor wide receivers, there are going to be questions with his ability to run routes. There are going to be questions with what does he do when the ball is going on the opposite side of the field. Is he working on different releases? Is he giving effort? Is he even running a route as opposed to just stopping and staring? There are just a lot of different things from a minutia standpoint with the receiver position looking at a guy like Corey Coleman that are going to be questions. The guy's a great playmaker, though, so how he gets slotted in this draft will be very interesting to watch if he does decide to declare, because he is a junior.
At tight end, Joshua Perkins, a senior from Washington.
Yeah, I've got to do some work on Perkins, and I know that Chad's pretty high on him, and Chad does great work for NFL.com. I want to do more work on Perkins. Obviously, the last tight end to come out of Washington, Austin Seferian Jenkins, has turned into a pretty good player for Tampa Bay when he's healthy. So I do want to do some more work on Perkins, and this is pretty interesting that he had him this highly regarded at this stage in the season. So excited to watch more there.
And then moving look at the offensive line, and these are some guys that you also spoke about on last week's podcast. Taylor Decker from Ohio State, Spencer Drango from Baylor, and then at the guard position, Joshua Garnett and Pat Elflein out of Ohio State. What have you seen out of that group?
Well, Pat Elflein's really, really impressive as an interior lineman for Ohio State. Gets really good movement. I think he's got functional athleticism, but his ability to move people at the point of attack in the run game is really, really impressive. Decker, I think that has the frame. He's got the ability to be an NFL tackle. You know, I just wanted to see him be a little bit more consistent this year, so I'm excited to dig deeper into his tape from this season and see exactly if he was able to follow through with that. But overall, I mean, this offensive line group is going to be really, really interesting, because depending on who declares, I think you've got top-shelf tackle talent, and, you know, if the Laramie Tunsils, you've got Ronnie Stanley from Notre Dame, who's excellent. And I think that this year there's a really good group of interior linemen as well. You know, we've talked about some of the names in the past, but really good group overall of offensive linemen. So for teams that need offensive line help, and this year the narrative says that the NFL overall needs a lot of offensive line help, this will be a good group.
Switching over to the defensive side of the ball, on the defensive line, Miles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M, Emmanuel Ogba, a junior from Oklahoma State, and then on the interior, Andrew Billings and Sheldon Day. Anybody on that list that jumps out to you?
Well, Billings is interesting. He's gotten a lot of hype. And, you know, I've seen some people on Twitter actually even throw around that he might be the best player in the draft. And, after watching him, I don't know if I'll go that far. I mean, really interesting guy in terms of his contact power. And he's got really, really what they call heavy hands. You know, when he hits you, you feel it as an offensive lineman. I don't think he's as good of an athlete even as Danny Shelton was coming out of Washington last year. He was the 12th overall pick, I believe. You know, Billings is interesting, but obviously is still a junior, has a ways to go. Miles Garrett's a sophomore. He was an all-everything freshman last year for Texas A&M. The coaches there have nicknamed him Batman just because of his physical physique. He's got a great athletic family. Look, the kid that brings the total package physically, hopefully for him moving forward, the mental side, and that has not been an issue in the past, but I'm just, you know, throwing it out there. You hope that he's able to put that all together as a SEC freshman All-American, putting that all together, moving forward, and turn into a top five NFL draft prospect. I think he's well on his way to doing that next year. So that'll be interesting to watch with Garrett. Overall, you know, this pass rusher group, we talked about Ogba in the past with C-Mac, you know, a guy that I compare to a little bit like Michael Sam, productive at the college level, he, in terms of pass rush production, but how athletic is he? Mm-hmm. Can he turn the corner against offensive tackles consistently and win the edge? I don't know that he can do that. Now, the thing he's got in his favor that Michael Sam didn't, this guy's got an NFL body. He's 6'4", 275, whereas Michael Sam was, I want to say he was in the 6'1", 240 range. I mean, this guy's got an NFL body, so he's got that in his favor.
Moving back into the linebackers, Sua Cravens, junior from USC, Antonio Morrison, a senior at Florida, and Jalen Smith, a junior from Notre Dame.
Well, Smith is just outstanding. Has been on the radar really since his true freshman season as a starter there for the Irish. Really, really excited to see him up close next week when he does come to play Temple next week at Lincoln Financial Field. But Jalen Smith is outstanding. I think he's a first-round pick at the linebacker position. Antonio Morrison, you keep wanting to like him because – he'll make some flash plays, and he's got some movement to him. He shows some toughness. He'll come downhill and take on a guard. But, again, you want to see the consistency. A lot of missed tackles with him, some bad angles every once in a while. So you want to see Morrison just be a little bit more consistent. Sua Cravens is interesting, too, because, Cravens, he kind of plays that hybrid safety linebacker position for USC. He's got the ability to be, good in space, and he's used in coverage very, very often. The question will be when he comes down to play as a box safety or as a box linebacker, what are his instincts going to be like? Because I thought that was a little bit of a question mark. And then looking forward, if he's not a linebacker and he's a safety, now he's got to make a transition to a whole new set of responsibilities from the safety position. So the last guy to come out of that role was Deion Bailey, who was on, a lot of people were really high on. He declared for the draft. Was an undrafted free agent, couldn't stick his rookie year in the league, ended up playing, and was actually Cam Chancellor's fill-in over the first part of the season here in Seattle, and now he's looking for a job again. So, we'll be interested to see what Craven's career arc is as he moves on, whether he stays at USC for this year, and with the coaching change, that is going to be a question, or if he decides to declare for the NFL.
And last but not least, let's look at the secondary. At the cornerback position, it's Vernon Hargraves from Florida, and then another Florida State guy, Jalen Ramsey, the two cornerbacks. And then at safety, Jeremy Cash, a senior from Duke, and Carl Joseph, who we've heard a lot about, obviously a knee injury, a really tough blow there. So Carl Joseph, Jeremy Cash, Jalen Ramsey, and Vernon Hargraves.
Well, Hargreaves has been on the national radar since his true freshman year. He was an all-SEC player as a true freshman, which is obviously very, very impressive. So really athletic kid in terms of his quickness, his change of direction, his ability to play man coverage. He's got good ball skills. He's instinctive. The question will be, and this will impact whether or not he's a first-round pick, in my opinion, is his size. I know he's listed 5'11". Doesn't look like he's 5'11". So that'll be a big question with him moving forward. I think Jalen Ramsey is the best defensive back in the country from Florida State. Was a safety last year, but played really mostly in the nickel spot for Florida State. And they were able to move him all around the formation in that role. Moved outside this year with two of their outside corners graduating to the NFL, and Ramsey's outstanding. He's got outstanding athleticism. We're going to talk about him in the pick six segment as well, but a guy that's really, really impressive to me. Joseph and Cash, I think with the safety position, everyone's kind of looking to find that guy, and find the next big name safety to come out of college football. I don't know that either of these two guys are it. I think Joseph, really physical guy, comes downhill, has been very productive in terms of his tackles, tackle production over his career. But question his angles. A lot of missed tackles, opportunities, because he'll come downhill and he comes down just at the wrong angle in the run game, and he'll let the back slip by. I don't think he's a great athlete. I think he's got good ball skills, but I don't think that he's got that sideline-to-sideline range. A lot of the issues people had with Landon Collins a year ago out of Alabama. Same thing I would say about Jeremy Cash, and Cash plays a very similar role to what Sua Cravens does at USC. And Cash, he plays over the slot. He's a bigger kid. He's like 6 foot, 6'1". But, again, I question whether or not he's got the range, he's got the athleticism to stick as a full-time player in the NFL. I think he's a guy that you have to draft and have a plan for moving forward. So very interested to see how those go. They're both seniors, so hopefully we see them both. And it doesn't sound like we're going to see Joseph at the Senior Bowl up close. But very excited to see how they move forward here throughout the draft process, especially once it comes to the combine and their testing numbers.
You're listening to Alex Smith and Fran Duffy here on the Journey to the Draft podcast. We want to thank everybody for listening, and be sure to rate and subscribe, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, however it is that you listen to us here on the Eagles Podcast Network. Fran, now let's shift a little bit. Let's look at your Saturday scouting column. And it's really interesting to me because I was listening to last week's show as I was getting ready to host this week, and you and C-Mac were talking about who's going to be that quarterback, the guy that, as we get closer into the further into the draft process, who's going to be that quarterback that, you know, all of a sudden starts to draw some more attention.
Sure.
And you highlighted on Friday when we posted your Saturday scouting column, Memphis quarterback Paxton Lynch.
Yeah.
And then he goes out and has a monster day, a big day for the American Athletic Conference as Memphis goes out and upsets Ole Miss. Paxton Lynch, what did you see from him on Saturday?
Well, you know, when you look at Lynch, you see a guy who's got great size and definitely has an NFL body, and then just the arm strength, the ability to make some really impressive throws. And I'm really excited to dig deeper into his tape and see exactly, you know, just watching him on Saturday, I've been able to kind of take him in as a fan. And, you know, I've watched a couple of their games, you know, Memphis, they played on Thursday night a couple weeks back against Cincinnati. So I was able to watch that game in full, got a chance to watch a lot of him against Ole Miss this past week. On the cuff, he seems like a guy that's going to be really, really impressive. He's a junior, so he's got another year of eligibility after this season. Really excited to dig deeper and see exactly what he brings to the table. But, you know, I wrote about it on Friday that this was going to be a really big opportunity for him to, you know, to elevate his stock. And he obviously came through with that. A huge win for Memphis and for the AAC over Ole Miss, a team that was number two in the country just 3 weeks ago.
I know that NFL comparisons can be tough, but Lynch is 6'7", 245.
Right.
Who does he compare to at the NFL level?
Well, I mean, just in terms of that body type, you know, you think of guys that have come out recently. I want to say Brock Osweiler from Arizona State, who ended up at Denver and is the backup quarterback there.
Some people calling for him there. Although the Broncos, give them credit, they keep winning. But
The defense has been coming through because they haven't been able to run the ball. And Peyton has come up small on a couple of different occasions. And obviously it's a shame to see it with obviously an all-timer like that. But I do want to dig deeper into Lynch, and I'll have a better sense. And the quarterback position overall is always tough to make those comparisons because I think everybody kind of has different parts of their game that may resemble certain players. But
sure.
But in terms of body type, you know, Lynch, look, he's got what you want. He's got the size. So very intrigued by him for sure.
Second on your list here, you had Louisiana Tech running back Kenneth Dixon versus Mississippi State. And Dixon, I don't think he ended up playing. An ankle injury has kept him out for a couple games here. What does that do for a prospect, even if it's not a season-ending injury, but just to miss a couple of games during the season?
Yeah, you know, his status was kind of up in the air going into the week. So wrote about him in hopes that he'd be able to make to play for the game. And obviously he was unable to do so. But a guy that, you know, I think that for a player like Dixon, who has been a starter since his freshman year, I think he's got enough tape on it. And since it is his senior year, you're talking now 2.5 seasons full of tape that I think that they've got. So I don't know that it's going to be hurting him too much that he's going to miss a couple games here with an ankle. Thankfully, it's nothing too serious since it's just an ankle injury. But, you know, look, Dixon, to me, is probably the best senior runner in this class, definitely the best one playing this season, because Jonathan Williams from Arkansas, I would have put on that same regard. And he's unable to play because of a foot injury that he sustained in training camp. But Dixon's got good vision inside, really competitive runner. He's a great receiver out of the backfield. He can do a lot of different things for that offense. So they are sorely missing him, and we'll look forward to his return for sure. Like I said, I think that when we do go to the Senior Bowl in January, he's going to be the best running back that's going to be playing down at that game.
Next up on your list, a very interesting top 10 matchup. LSU coming away with a 35-28 victory over Florida, and a player that you were keeping an eye on was LSU wide receiver Travon Dorrell, and he goes for 5 catches, 65 yards. What'd you see from that top 10 matchup?
You know, Dorrell's interesting, and, you know, just kind of clicking back between that game and some of the other games that were on at that time, when you look at this kid, he's an explosive kid. He can get off the line of scrimmage really, really well. He's got the ability to make plays in the vertical passing game. They've had some issues early in the season, but I think Brandon Harris, the quarterback there, has really come along over the last few weeks, and they've had more success in the passing game, which is going to be great for them down the stretch because you know what they can do running the football with Leonard Fournette. But Dorrell, I think, is that kind of vertical threat. He's got decent size. He's got the ability to play the ball in the air. You know, I think I wanted to see a little bit more consistency from him down the field in terms of his hands. But a guy that's got the ability to run good routes. And I talked about the explosive playmaking ability. Doral's got that. So a really intriguing guy moving forward as a junior here at the wide receiver position.
I think a lot of people by now know about Leonard Fournette and the incredible year that he's having. But looking at that Florida-LSU matchup, what are some of the other names there that have intrigued you along the way?
You know, one guy that I like on the Florida side is Jonathan Bullard, you know, from Florida, the defensive lineman who actually came out and said that, you know, Fournette wouldn't be too much that they can handle. I know that there were some, that quote was kind of butchered a little bit, but I mean, it is what it is. He said it.
180 yards and two touchdowns.
Sure, exactly. But look, Bullard's a really interesting guy. They play him up and down the line of scrimmage. I think he's a really good run defender. You know, he's got the ability to two gap. He can hold up at the point of attack and you know, make plays in the run game as an edge setter or from the backside in pursuit. A guy that can get after the passer in a number of different ways. I like the ability, the fact that he can line up and down the line of scrimmage. And that Florida defensive front, you look at Alex McAllister, Brian Cox Jr., really impressive defensive front there for Florida. On the LSU side, you know, I think Fidel Alexander has some ability as a run blocker. I talked about him in the column this week, too, for Saturday Scouting. Mm-hmm. A guy that can move people in the run game. He's not the best athlete, but he's got tackle guard versatility. And a guy that, look, if you can move people in the run game, you have value at the next level. So Alexander's a name to watch.
And then Virginia Tech, a couple of tight ends you're looking at with the Hokies. Bucky Hodges and Ryan Malik as they took on Miami safety Deion Bush.
Yeah, and the two tight ends are really interesting. You know, people don't really talk about Malik, who's a senior, you know, kind of unheralded. But when you watch him, he's a really good route runner. You know, I think that he shows the ability to get open in the passing game. I think he's got solid hands. He's not a bad athlete at all for the position, and I'm excited to watch him moving forward in the draft process and see how he tests and how he performs at the All-Star games, because I think he's got a lot of ability, especially in the small areas of the game. But his strength really over the course of his career has been as a blocker, and he's got really good technique in the ground game. And we know here in Philadelphia what that can do for an offense is if you've got a tight end that can be a successful blocker. And I think that Malik has that ability to hold up at the point of attack, whether it's in the sweep where he's, you know, pinning guys inside, where he's trying to stretch the play as a outside stretch play to the front side. I think that Malik has a lot of ability on the ground. So really kind of a two-way player there for Virginia Tech. And then Bucky Hodges, really interesting kid. He's a sophomore, redshirt sophomore, so he's draft eligible. Big kid, can line up outside and inside, but really sees a lot of his targets in space where, you know, whether he's lining up out wide as an X receiver or in the slot, he's got the ability to get down the field as a high school quarterback, so still kind of coming into his own here in the position. But again, like Malik, is really impressed me in the ground, you know, with his ability to block in the run game. So two very intriguing guys. I would say that Hodges is probably has more upside of the two, just because he's obviously younger, but he's got more athleticism to him. But I like Malik as well. I like both those guys.
Be sure to check out Fran's Saturday Scouting column every weekend on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And then Fran, just looking at some of the other top 25 matchups from this past weekend. On Thursday night, Stanford with a 56-35 victory over UCLA. Any prospects that stand out in that matchup?
You know, I think that when you look at UCLA, the guy that has been just so steady for them throughout the season is Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle, who is a junior. I think he's a little bit unheralded, but you look at Mel Kiper and his big board, I think he just put it up to number 9 on the big board.
Wow.
You don't really hear about him out here on the East Coast, but Clark is an absolute stud, especially against the run game. You know, his ability to two-gap, hold up at the point of attack, he can anchor down and take on a double team, but then also has the quickness and the agility, the change of direction to win in one-gap situations and get into the backfield and make plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage. So I was really, really – I didn't get a chance to watch Clark until recently. I came away very, very impressed with him. You have him and Deion Hollins there as the edge rusher for UCLA, and I think they've got a pair of two really disruptive players in the front seven. So that's really, to me, is the strength of that defense.
Moving into the Big Ten, Iowa with a dominating 40-10 victory over Northwestern. Northwestern was a team, I think they started 5-0, and they've lost their last two games. But Iowa and Northwestern, any guys to catch your eye there?
Yeah, you know, you look at Iowa, and really the guy that's made a ton of plays for them so far on the defensive side of the ball is Desmond King, the corner. He's a junior. He's got good size. He's got good athleticism. He doubles also as a returner, and he's made a number of different plays for them in a return game over the course of the season. So King is a guy that I studied in the offseason. I came away really, really impressed with. He's got the ability to play in off. He can play in press. And just his instincts and coverage, I was really impressed with King. So a guy that, look, in this cornerback class at the senior group, there's not a ton of big names, and no one's really kind of taken hold of that number one spot. But in the junior class, you know, we talk about Desmond King, you talk about Jalen Ramsey, Cam Sutton from Tennessee, Tre'Davious White from LSU, Vernon Hargraves, we talked about from Florida, a lot of big names in the junior class from the cornerback position.
And then looking inside the top 10, Alabama goes on the road versus number 9, Texas A&M, and they come away with a 41-23 victory. Derrick Henry's running back, who a lot of people are looking at, he goes for 32 carries, 236 yards on the ground. Fran, whether it's Henry or someone else, what names stand out to you between Alabama and Texas A&M?
Well, Henry for sure. And, you know, and look, going into the year, I studied Henry, and I wasn't sure, you know, looking at him, because you know what kind of back he is. He's a big physical downhill guy. You know, is he Eddie Lacy? Is he Jeremy Hill in terms of a big guy with light feet, you know, the ability to make people miss? Or is he more of like an Andre Williams from Boston College, who ended up with the Giants as a fourth or fifth round pick, in kind of a change of pace power back role? And I'm still kind of in between there. I think that I've seen some really good things from Henry. I think he's gotten better in a lot of different areas this year, but excited to dig deeper into the tape from this past season, or, you know, from this current season. And again, still a junior, so he could go back for another year, but really, really impressive guy there for them. And I've always been a Jake Coker fan, you know, in terms of his skill set. And I know he hasn't been overly consistent, but a big kid with a strong arm that shows the ability to be accurate, and that has been his issue so far, is, you know, up and down accuracy, throwing behind receivers, and not necessarily being on time with his pass catchers. But just the ability, you know, in terms of his where you start with Coker from a size and arm strength standpoint, it puts him ahead of the pack, and again, in a senior quarterback class there, where you're looking for, you know, someone to hang your hat on.
And then finally, another great game from Saturday, and one of the craziest endings that I think you'll ever see. Michigan State and Michigan, just an absolute wild finish, where all Michigan, there was 10 seconds left on the clock, and all Michigan had to do was get the punt away, and they win the game. It's a little bit of a low snap. The punter tries to pick it up, and all hell breaks loose. At that point, Michigan State runs it back for a touchdown as time expires. Have you ever seen a crazier ending than that?
You know, I actually watched when Appalachian State beat Michigan a few years back. So, you know, I got to watch that on TV. This one was interesting, too, because I was actually walking my dog during the end of the game, but I had it up on my phone. You know, so
always connected.
Watching the game on my phone as I'm walking the dog, and I was back at my apartment by the time that the end of the game was coming, and I guess my phone was a little bit behind. I could hear the people in the apartment below me screaming at the top of their lungs, telling them to run, 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 go, and then, you know, celebrating. I guess there's Michigan State fans in my apartment building, and I catch up to it on my phone, and it was just unbelievable that finish of the game. And it's a tough way to go out for sure. But some interesting players in that, you know, in that game as well. You know, Willie Henry, I think, had a big game for Michigan, a defensive tackle. It plays a number of different roles for them in terms of playing inside and playing outside. I think he's got good athleticism. That's really his calling card. I think he's a prototypical three technique. He's got the ability to be a two-gapper, but I see him as more of a one-gap kind of player. Just having studied him very early this season, I think he's got some ability in that kind of scenario as a one-gap player. But, again, another junior that could potentially go back to school. So very interesting player for sure for them moving forward.
Connor Cook goes 18 of 39, 328 yards, but the completion percentage not exactly where you want it to be. Where has Cook's projection gone through this season?
You know, I'm excited to see how the narrative kind of flips on him, because coming into the year, a lot of people thought, okay, he's the best senior quarterback. And now you start to hear the whispers of, you know, what is his character like off the field, because he's never been named a captain there. And for a three-year starter at the quarterback position, you would kind of raise your eyebrows to wonder, well, okay, well, how come this kid's never been named a captain? You know, so there's the questions there. You know, a lot of people knock his arm strength. I don't think his arm is the issue. I think that he's got pretty good arm strength. You know, he's not great. He's not Hackenberg. He's not Cardale Jones. He's probably not even Jared Goff in terms of his arm. But, I think he can make the throws you need him to make. To me, the question with Cook has always just been every once in a while, and it's gotten better throughout the course of his career, every once in a while he makes some just decisions that make you scratch your head. And that has been an issue from time to time this year. Overall, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think that necessarily he's probably a top five pick. He could still end up going that high because we know how the quarterback position works. But overall, I think he's a pretty good player. So I would say that I am a fan of Connor Cook. Now, the question about the leadership and things like that, I think that's going to be interesting to see what more information comes out of that as the process unfolds here.
All right, Fran, great stuff here in Draft Buzz. Now we will move right along into Pick 6. Now it's time for Pick 6. All right, Fran, well, for our Pick 6 segment today, I took a look at the Eagles matchup tonight with the New York Giants, and one of the key players, whether he plays or not, is Odell Beckham, and just how much he changes that New York offense if he's in the game. But thinking about Beckham, my question to you is the freak athletes, the best pure athletes that you're looking at this year. And it could be guys that, you know, maybe they don't fit so well in one position, and they could be headed towards a position switch at the next level. But just from a pure athletic standpoint, which guys have caught your eye?
Well, you know, looking at the running back position first, you know, there were a couple of different guys that I wanted to go with. And Kenyon Drake from Alabama was one who's kind of the do-everything player for them offensively. But, you know, I went with Kareem Hunt from Toledo because a top 25 team. He's missed a couple games here because of injury and suspension. But when I watched him, and at 5'10", 190 pounds, or I'm sorry, 5'11", 215 pounds, excuse me, kind of reminded me a bit of Gio Bernard. Coming out of North Carolina, he was a second-round pick. I think he's got really good quickness and change of direction. His agility, ability to jump cut and create space for himself in the running game, I think is very, very good. I think he's got the wiggle to make people miss in a short area. And they flex him around and have him run receiver routes as well, you know, whether he's in the slot or out wide. Hunt's an interesting guy. The off-field stuff notwithstanding, I think athletically he will be one of the stars of the combine at the running back position when he does decide to come out, whether it's this year as a junior or next year as a senior.
It's interesting that you mention his ability to catch balls out of the backfield and they can spread him around, play him as a wide receiver. I think obviously we're seeing a lot more of that in the NFL, and we'll see two of the best of that tonight in Darren Sproles with the Eagles and Shane Vereen, who's sure excellent in catching passes out of the backfield. How much are scouts looking at that ability now as the NFL shifts more into, okay, running backs, they have to be complete players. They can't just be, you know, carry the ball so many times a game. They have to be able to catch the ball. Does that, you know, how are scouts looking at that this year?
I think it's an area where it's just another box to check for a scout. And if you can't do that, that's going to hurt you more so than if you can, it's going to help you. I think it's more the opposite where, you know, guys that can't offer anything in the pass game from a receiving standpoint, it's going to hurt them. You know, and whereas I don't know that a guy like Kareem Hunt's going to see his stock soar because he can be flexed out and can catch passes out of the backfield. I think that Hunt, look, the size will be a question with him. The level of competition will be a question with him. The off-field and injury concerns will be a question with him. But I think that his ability to catch passes out of the backfield, along with his vision, his quickness, his athleticism overall, I think those are the things that he's going to be able to hang his hat on. So it's a good question. I think that those guys, and that absolutely is a big part of the game now because it's a matchup league, and if you have a running back that can play on all three downs and can make an impact in the passing game, that's going to go a long way.
So it's not a bonus skill anymore. It's a requirement at this point.
I would say that it's a requirement, depending on how you want to play offense. It's a requirement. If you want to play like how the New York Giants are playing and you want to be able to play with 11 personnel and one back, one tight end and play primarily that way out of no huddle, then you probably want your running back to be able to catch passes out of the backfield.
Yeah.
But if you play like how Dallas played 2 years ago, or last year rather, with DeMarco Murray, that may not be as important to you if you want a guy that is going to line up in the I formation and you're going to slow things down and you're going to run, and then throw a couple passes with Tony Romo to Dez Bryant, then I think that that's a little bit less important. But, looking at it, moving on ahead here, another guy that we talked about is the second guy here, Corey Coleman, a guy that, look, athletically, everything is there. And one thing that I do when I'm looking at these prospects is just looking athletically at their numbers. I kind of have a little bit of a formula here that just looks at what their reported numbers are, and we'll get the official numbers at the combine and their pro days, but how they stack up in history and where that kind of ranks with other draft prospects. And you look at Corey Coleman, who reportedly runs a 4.38 40. He runs a 6.62 in the three cone. He's got a 132-inch broad jump and a 45-inch vertical jump. So you're looking at it like, okay, well, what's the context there? All of those numbers would have been in the 90th percentile or above of all the wide receivers drafted in the last 5 years. So it gives you, it's a big sample size, and he just shows you where he is athletically. And obviously the production's there, but you know, his ability to change direction, his ability to pull away from defenders in the open field, he can get on top of defensive backs. Athletically, everything's there for Corey Coleman. Really, really impressive for sure.
You talked about it earlier in this podcast, but for guys that are playing in like a Baylor offense or an Oregon offense, you know, spread it out, call it a college offense, call it whatever you want.
Sure.
But for a guy like Coleman, are his numbers boosted by that offense, or how much of it is just pure raw talent with this guy?
A lot of the numbers are boosted by the offense. So it's when you're watching, it's your job to kind of figure out, okay, how much of his numbers are because of his talent, or how much of his numbers are because of his offense, and figure out, okay, well, is he going to see this kind of look in the NFL? Is he going to be fed the ball this much in the NFL? Josh Doctson from TCU is another great example, and it's actually a good to bring him into the discussion, because both guys have been very, very productive. I would say probably, without looking at the numbers, probably the two most productive receivers in college football this year, especially in the Power Five conferences. To me, Doctson, his skills translate more to the NFL, to me, than Coleman does. And a lot of the things with Coleman, just to me, not really refined as a route runner yet, not really refined at getting off the line of scrimmage yet. And those are big issues. And people have had those same issues with Terrence Williams, and Terrence Williams hasn't really developed into, you know, kind of that big-time receiver that some thought he would be coming out of Baylor a couple of years ago. Josh Gordon has issues of his own. But, on the field, kind of different body types, a different skill set, not really one you can compare it to. But, I think that those are the things you want to look at, not necessarily the numbers. And the numbers are important for sure, but you want to look at his skill set. What are the traits that can make him successful in the NFL? So Coleman is definitely very interesting. But when you look on the defensive side of the football, Miles Jack is going to be outstanding. And we've talked about him a number of different times here on the podcast. He's the first junior to declare for the draft. He's out for the year with the meniscus. He's going to come back, and his plan is to blow up the combine. And he absolutely will. So I'm not even going to talk about him too in-depth, because we've talked about him a good amount here on the podcast. One guy I will talk about, though, Montese Overton from ECU, and a guy that no one really talks about on a national scale. But again, you look at those numbers, and I looked at those reported numbers, and in the same way I did with Coleman, I went back and put them in context with other linebackers over the past 5 years. 4.5 in the 40 for a 6'2", 220-pound linebacker. So he runs a 4.5. He had a 6.91 in the three cone, a 4.08 in the short shuttle, and very good jump numbers as well, as 125 in the broad and 35.5 in the vertical. So you go back and you're like, okay, well, where do those numbers stand? Again, all of those numbers would be in the 90th percentile or above in every of the past 5 years worth of linebackers drafted in the NFL. So a guy that's got decent size, you probably want to see him add a little bit of weight. And if he adds that weight, probably those numbers will drop a little bit. Plays strong side linebacker in their 3-4 scheme, lines up over the tight end, can do a lot of different things athletically, can play sideline to sideline. Overton's a really, really interesting guy, and I would expect that teams that look for those sideline to sideline rangy players are going to be really interested in Overton.
I think it's our good friend Tony Pauline, who at the combine every year goes with his Mr. Universe.
Yes.
Which is the guys who, when they get up there and everybody gets to look at them, they just kind of blow you away physically. Who's going to be the Mr. Universe this year?
Well, the good thing is that you want to be Mr. Universe. You don't want to be looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, which is another Tony Pauline classic. I think that it's really tough at this point. I would say, and one guy I actually almost talked about was Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss, who's going to see his first action of the season And he's got a huge matchup this coming week against Myles Garrett from Texas A&M, mm-hmm. who we talked about earlier. Tunsil has got great size, and with his athleticism, the way that he moves is outstanding. So actually, it just occurred to me, who Mr. Universe is going to be? It's going to be Philadelphia native. It's going to be Sean Oakman. Yeah, it's going to be Sean Oakman.
Between Oakman and Coleman, is Baylor the most built team out there?
It might be. I mean, Alabama always has, legit guys, and LSU always has legit guys. Oregon, a lot of these schools just pipe out good-looking players. Some of those players that they just all look the part. But Baylor, for sure, is up there, and Oakman, they don't call him the Oak Monster for nothing.
From your experience, who has been the least athletic-looking prospect that has had the best NFL career?
The least.
When you looked at him at the combine or through the scouting process, you said, this guy doesn't really look like a player. And he's turned out to have a nice career.
The most. Let's see. I mean, it's tough. I would say, I'm just throwing out names here at this point. One guy that I kind of worried about his athleticism, and it's early, very early still, Haole Kikaha from the New Orleans Saints. I didn't see as being athletic enough to – and look, they use him a number of different ways in New Orleans. Rob Ryan had a plan for him, and he's been very, very productive for him. So I may be wrong on that one. I liked Jarvis Landry on tape and his athleticism on tape, and his combine numbers were awful. They were, historically bad for whatever reason. But I didn't see that on – I saw that – I thought he played faster and played quicker on tape than what those numbers showed. But, you look at the combine numbers and whether or not they mean anything moving forward, that could be a big thing there with Landry, who has had a pretty good career so far. So that's a good question. I love going back and seeing the guys that I missed on or seeing which ones panned out and which ones didn't. But which ones did I think weren't athletic enough is a good one.
I always just think about, they always show the Tom Brady at the combine.
Sure.
Where he's just kind of standing there and look at Tom Brady now. But just seeing where guys are there and how they come along. Who was Mr. Universe last year? Was it Varga?
Well, Varga for sure at the Senior Bowl. For the combine, that's a good question. Varga for sure. When Varga stepped onto the stage at the Senior Bowl last year, everyone kind of turned their heads and was like, who is this kid from Yale? It's very, very interesting to see. But moving along here, you got another linebacker, Leonard Floyd, we've talked about in the past from Georgia, was their outside linebacker last year, is an inside linebacker this year, has played in coverage, he's got great length, he's got the ability to turn the corner as a pass rusher, really is probably the most athletic and most dynamic pass rusher in terms of draft eligibility that's available this year. I'm a big, big fan of Floyd. I think that he's got the ability to be a top 15 pick, so athletically everything's there for him.
Alex Smith and Fran Duffy in our Pick 6 segment talking the 6 best pure athletes as the Eagles get set to face off with Odell Beckham Jr., who is just one of those amazingly gifted players that we'll see at Lincoln Financial Field on Monday night. Fran, any other guys, just from an athletic standpoint, that have really caught your eye here this season?
The last two. I'm going to give you the last two defensive backs. One's Jalen Ramsey, who we talked about earlier from Florida State, who I think is probably the best defensive back in the country. He's 6'1", 205 pounds. And everyone talks about spark score once we get into the months of February and March and waiting for the draft to get closer. Talks about that athletic number that grades a player's athletic ability. His number coming out of high school was 130.3, which would have been in the top 90% of all defensive backs at the NFL level. That was him coming out of high school.
Okay.
So Ramsey, I think, has everything you want in terms of size and athleticism. His long speed is very, very good, and his quickness and change of direction, just how fluid he is, it's really, really impressive. So Ramsey's one guy. And then Will Redmond as well from Mississippi State. Didn't have a start coming into the year, but played a lot of snaps for the Bulldogs in the past as a 4.38 guy, has reportedly good athletic numbers as well in the 6.5 and the 3 cone and 3.92 in the short shuttle. So he's got decent size, he's got great speed, and the change of direction and agility are there as well. So Redmond is a guy that I think will raise some eyebrows with his athletic numbers next spring.
We talked a bit about Trevon Boykin, TCU quarterback, a little bit earlier today. And you mentioned him as a candidate who might be in line for a position change moving forward. Any other guys that you've watched on film where you say, hey, you know, they're putting up decent numbers at their position here at the college level, but they may not be able to do that in the NFL.
The one guy, and I don't know that the position switch, and we mentioned him earlier, was Ogba, you know, who's been very, very productive for Oklahoma State and is one of the top pass rushers in the Big 12. You know, but I just don't see the traits that make him a big-time pass rusher in the NFL. Again, could prove me wrong there, but, you know, and I hope he does, obviously. But, you know, that was my big question with him was, what is his athleticism like? Will that translate to the league?
How far does athleticism go? You know, how much does it – there's all the other things that go into football, whether it's, you know, a football IQ or a scheme fit, but just pure talent. How much is that evaluated?
We could do a whole podcast on that question.
I got time.
Yeah, right. We got some time before the game starts. Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, when you talk about athleticism, you know, in terms of the draft, I think it's a good starting point. And that's what you're looking at when you bring players into your program. You want the mental makeup to be there. And that's ultimately what makes good players great, makes average players good, makes bad players average, is just the intangibles, whether you want to call them instincts and how he fits into a culture, what's his work ethic like, and things of that nature. I think that's what elevates players from being good to great and great to elite is, you know, that aspect. But you want that starting point to be the athleticism and really the body type. And those are the two things I think that go hand in hand. And, you know, that's when you start talking about the measurables, you know, what's his height, what's his hand size, what's his arm length, what's his weight, now you hear people talking about the knee circumference and ankle circumference and things like that, and hand size for quarterbacks and for running backs and receivers as well. You know, and then you got the testing numbers in terms of 40 and agility drills and the jumps and everything like that. I think you have, if you want to find a guy that is a good athlete and brings all the intangibles, now you've got the combination to be a very, very good player, barring injury. So that's where the other thing that comes in. So really, I think that you look at athleticism, you look at body type, and that's your starting point, and that's why those guys go higher. Because then people say, okay, well, his mental makeup, it might be not exactly what I want, but maybe I can coach to get that out of him and get what we want out of him mentally and bring him along that way. So, you know, I think that's why you'll see the great athletes go earlier than some may expect. I think that's why some guys that are good athletes, people don't think are going to get drafted, will get drafted. And then sometimes the character and the mental makeup is enough to drop them as well. So it's an interesting conversation. Again, we could probably talk for 45 minutes just about that one thing, and I just tried to sum it up in 2.5 minutes. But yeah, that's where I stand with that one.
Where does knee circumference come into the picture?
I don't know for sure. From what I understand, I think it's the ability to then put on weight.
Okay.
So if a guy, you know, it's how much weight can a guy carry? So
makes sense.
If he's got wider knees, then he's got the ability to add on 20 more pounds, you know, whatever the equation is there. He's got the ability to add on more weight. And so if you're talking about a defensive lineman that you want to maybe convert to nose tackle, you want to see, okay, what can his frame take on?
You drop knee circumference and my ears just kind of shot up. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into it.
It's the third week of October. We're talking about knee circumference for college prospects. I mean, welcome to football.
Yeah. Obviously, there are a lot of physical evaluations that go into selecting the next great class of NFL players. And I learned something new today. I learned about knee circumference and how it relates to prospects. Didn't expect that. Fran didn't expect Taylor Swift at the start of the show. I didn't expect knee circumference.
No.
But Fran, excellent stuff there in pick six. And I think it's about time to hit the home stretch here and go into our mailbag.
Let's do it.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, Fran, let's take a look at our mailbag here on the Journey to the Draft podcast. Once again, we thank everybody for listening. Be sure to rate, be sure to subscribe, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, or however it is that you listen to our Eagles network, our Eagles network of podcasts here. So, Fran, our first question that comes in, and this one comes from Kevin Gardner Gregory on Twitter, and he wants to know, do scouts look at how players respond to tough losses? And his example is the Michigan game. So after Michigan loses in a crushing way like they do to Michigan State, how do scouts look at that next game?
You know, honestly, I think that part of it, and this is part of the things that we don't really know everything about, is, you know, scouts are in the building not just for the games, but they're also there for practices. So the scouts from different NFL teams and CFL teams that are in Michigan this week, you know, after that tough loss to Michigan State, seeing how guys practice and how they handle themselves in the days leading up, you know, after that game, I think is very, very important to see. And look, moving forward, you know, you want to see Michigan. Look, they've got everything in front of them that they still want to be able to achieve. They've got Ohio State still on the schedule. They've got the ability to win the Big Ten still, and then potentially earn a right to go to the playoff. So it's not over for them. So I think that they still have a lot to play for. You don't want to see them go in the tank, but you know, I think you take that into, you know, different games as well. Jared Goff threw 5 picks last week. Mm-hmm. You know, how does he respond moving forward? Even though they win the, you know, you kind of take a look and see how do players do on an individual basis as well.
It kind of reminds me of Tim Tebow, and Tim Tebow gets talked about a lot.
Does he?
But he does.
Okay.
I've heard here and there people talk about Tim Tebow.
Sure, right.
But Florida had the game. I forget who it was that they lost to. And Tebow came out afterwards, said, "You'll never see a team play as hard as we do. You'll never see, you know, I'm going to play my best." And from there on, I think Florida went on to win the national championship. How much did that moment, what did that do for Tebow, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, that whole thing with him going in first round, it was very, very interesting from a lot of different respects. And especially at the quarterback position, I think it's different than any other because it's so much dependent on, you know, outward facing, you know, what kind of presence mm-hmm. is he in the locker room? What kind of presence is he for your franchise? You know, what can you do with him to turn him around technically if you feel like you can fix his mechanics, which has always been the discussion there. That's a whole other – again, you're asking a question that could be the topic of a whole other podcast in itself. But you know, I think that overall, when you're talking about quarterbacks, it still comes down to what you do on the field and, you know, what you can do for your team between the lines.
Next question comes from @KieranNew on Twitter, and he wants to know, are there any quarterbacks you would love the Eagles to take for development that you could see being a starter down the road?
For development? You know, well, it's tough to say right now, obviously, because you don't know the juniors that are going to declare for the draft. You know, I think that there are some senior quarterbacks that have caught my eye. One of them I've talked about in the past is from Indiana, Nate Sudfeld, the brother of Zach Sudfeld, previously of New England and now was previously with the New York Jets. But, you know, Sudfeld, I think, flashed to me last year when I watched him. And when I watched Tevin Coleman coming out of Indiana, the running back, I think he's got the ability to throw the ball down the field. He showed pretty good accuracy, showed the ability to move within the pocket. I thought he showed the ability to throw with anticipation, which you don't always see from quarterbacks coming out of systems like that. And a guy that really, really impressed me from that standpoint. You know, a lot of people talk about Cody Kessler. The question with him will be his arm strength, but, you know, he handled pressure well a year ago, showed the ability to be accurate and throw with anticipation. But the question, again, will be his size and his arm strength, his ability to throw the ball. I talked about Jay Coker, you know, and a lot of people see him kind of as a mid to late round pick, you know, if that. But to me, Coker's a guy that you can bring in and try and work on because you have that bait. We talked about it earlier with the athleticism and the body type. You've got a good starting point there with Jay Coker and his ability. Jacoby Brissett from NC State is a guy that I think is probably going to go high. I don't know that you're going to be taking him and thinking he's going to be a developmental guy. I think he's going to end up being one of the first couple quarterbacks coming off the board here. Showed a lot of ability last year. You know, I can remember that play he made against Florida State. It was probably the one or two best individual plays I saw a year ago where he shed 3 tackles and rolled to his right and found a receiver in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. You know, I've said on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, kind of reminds me a little bit of number 5, Jacoby Brissett from NC State. But
will he always love you?
I think he will always love you. But, you know, Brissett, I think, is pretty interesting. You know, Dak Prescott, I think a lot of people are going to talk about as a developmental guy. Terrell Hunt has never been able to stay healthy. Mike Bercovici from Arizona State has shown some ability. So I think there's some developmental guys in this class. And, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll all come down to who takes over that number one spot.
On the subject of developmental quarterbacks, I'm curious about a guy that, while he's not part of the draft class this year, he's actually already on the Eagles roster. He's on the Eagles practice squad, and that's Steven Morris, who just seems like a guy that the Eagles coaches can take in and say, okay, you'll get to learn the system. We'll see how you are down the road. But, Fran, what was your evaluation of Steven Morris at Miami when he was coming out?
I liked Steven Morris coming out, you know, and his arm strength was one thing that surprised me. He goes, he's a little bit of a smaller guy, but I can remember his junior year, they went up to South Bend and played Notre Dame, and they came out guns blazing with the first, I want to say 10 to 12 plays. They took like three or four shots down the field, and he put them right on the money for his receivers, and there were like two or three drops, just killers. I think Philip Dorsett had one. Stacy Coley, I think, was a freshman at the time, and he's a junior now. He may have had another. There were some big-time drops that just killed them. But Steven Morris has always impressed me with his ability to stretch the field. I think he's a good athlete. Not a great athlete, but a good athlete. And, you know, the ability to make tight window throws and throw with anticipation, I think, have gotten better. The issue with him coming out was, how was he handling pressure? And there were times as a senior where that was a question with him, and that's why he ended up going, I think he was he undrafted, or was he a sixth or seventh round pick from Jacksonville? Either way, he ended up going to Jacksonville because the offensive coordinator from Miami was with the Jaguars at the time, Jed Fish. And now that Jed Fish is up in Michigan with Harbaugh, Morris was without a home there with the Jaguars. And I look, as far as a guy that you can come in and try and develop, I liked Morris a lot.
Our next question comes from Angelo Yeski, who wants to know, friend, this guy you've already talked about a little bit today, but Jalen Ramsey, do you see him as a safety or a corner at the pro level?
I think he's whatever you want him to be. And I think if you're going to play him at safety, he's going to be, you know, Eric Berry. He's going to be that guy that you're going to move all around the formation and do a number of different things with. He could be what Kenny Vaccaro is for the Saints, but I think he's an excellent corner as well. You know, I think he's a cornerback. To me, you look at Jalen Ramsey, you're looking at a potential Patrick Peterson type player, where he's got the size and he's got the athleticism, the ability to hold up in man coverage consistently. At that combination, Ramsey is really, really impressive.
And last but certainly not least, we go to a question from Chris Wentland, who wants to know, kind of a generic question, but what positions would you like to see the Eagles upgrade through the draft this year?
Well, it's tough. You know, it's tough to say because we don't know what the roster is going to look like 6 months from now.
Sure.
We've got a number of different free agents. Sam Bradford's one. Walter Thurman's another on the back end at safety. There's still question marks there we haven't been through free agency. Overall, I think, you know, obviously you want to add some offensive line depth, and that has been an issue this year in terms of just consistent play. And you look at that area, I think the area where you're set, I mean, defensive line has been excellent, and I think that they're young enough that you don't need to necessarily plug a ton of young talent into that area. But look, I've always been a proponent of draft the best players. And, you know, you look at a guy like Jordan Hicks, who a lot of people thought, what, you just drafted for Kiko Alonso, you redid Tamiko Ryans, you were planning on redoing Michael Kendricks, why are you drafting Jordan Hicks? Well, this is why you draft Jordan Hicks, because if there are injuries and you need a guy to play, now you've got a very talented player to come in and play at a high level, and Hicks has done that. So to me, I never go into one draft and say, like, oh man, they need to get A, B, and C. It'd be nice if they got A, B, and C, but if there's a better player in D, E, F, then I'm all for going that route as well.
Fran, we actually have one more question here, and this one comes from at Alex Smith, PHI, who wants to know, when do you start looking at FCS players? Because the 10th-ranked Fordham Rams.
Right, who's Fordham got?
Chase Edmonds, running back. Obviously, probably the best running back in the country. Leonard Fournette leads all college football in rushing.
Right.
Chase Edmonds is number two.
Okay.
That's a real stat.
Okay, that's a real stat.
So Chase Edmonds, running back out of Fordham. Quarterback Kevin Anderson, he's a little bit undersized.
Okay.
And Fordham kind of runs that spread attack. But in all seriousness, FCS guys, smaller schools, when do you get a chance to look at that?
Well, sometimes I do get a chance. If I hear really good things about a guy, then I will try and watch him in the off season or early in the season. But typically with those guys, it's not until I start seeing who's going to the All-Star games. And of course, with my conversations with our good friend Tony Pauline, who is the ultimate in terms of draft insider, and his knowledge of what's going on behind the scenes, he may have a bead on who's coming down the pipe here. Not that I necessarily always agree with who's coming down the pipe, but just to see who the names are that people are talking about, consult with Tony and see who people are seeing, and then try and give him a watch. I know one guy he's pretty high on is Reggie Diggs, the receiver from Richmond, who is
Spiders.
Yeah, the Spiders, exactly. So we shall see.
Chase Edmonds is only a sophomore anyway, so he's not going to be a
prospect
this
year. So I'm probably not
going
to be watching him for some time.
Keep an eye on him.
All right, we'll do.
All right, Fran, great stuff, and I think that's going to wrap things up
here
on the Journey to the Draft podcast. Yeah, how'd I do?
I did a good job. Okay. It was well done.
I'll go back. I'll look at the tape.
Well, listen,
you can break down the tape with me.
You've got a few more weeks here, hopefully more, before we start getting into really the nitty-gritty here on Journey to the Draft. And I believe you will be going down to the Senior Bowl and to the Shrine Game and to the Combine. So good to get your feet wet now.
Just taking it all in.
That's right.
But excellent stuff. And again, thank you everyone out there for listening. Be sure to rate and subscribe, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, however it is that you listen to the Journey to the Draft podcast. For my partner, Fran Duffy, I am Alex Smith. We'll see all of you next week on the next Journey to the Draft.